Are you comfortable shopping online? Hi, I'm Jill Najeau. I'm filling in for Larry Mueller. Glad to have you with us on the Ideas Network. We'll be talking about internet shopping with our regular guest, Peter Green. He is a computer consultant with Infostar.com, and he stops by every other month to help you with your computer-related problems. What do you do to keep your information safe online? And of course, we'll take tech questions, so what's been bothering you with your computer? Join the conversation by calling 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. And of course, you can also send an email, and that would be ideas@wpr.org. Well, hello, Peter.
Always great to be back, Jill.
Well, it's great to talk with you. I don't think I've gotten a chance to do that before, so this should be fun. You know, I need to start off by asking you, do you shop online?
Oh, absolutely. Okay. I've been doing it for a long time.
Mm-hmm. What keeps you secure in knowing that you're shopping online and being safe?
I like to make sure that the site is secure, so you usually look for the HTTPS, mm-hmm. and different browsers display like a open lock or a locked lock.
Yeah, like a padlock.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And where do they find that?
Or a key that's broken or
okay.
solid.
Where is that found?
It's usually in the lower right, the bottom part of the mm-hmm. browser to show you
yeah.
that
is there
key
something
or
else up in the search bar, too?
Yep.
Okay.
It's there, too.
Mm-hmm.
What's interesting is sites apply for what are called SSL certificates, and then there are different levels of these secure socket layer certificates. And the process of applying for this certificate is that you are who you say you are and that you can prove it. And, it's been a while since I've done one. I don't know what they've changed with their protocol, but it used to be that you'd get a phone call and talk to somebody or, you know, to exchange and validate the information and send you a letter and stuff. But I think a lot of that's changed with digital signatures and so forth. But that the idea was that there's a certificate that validates that who you are as a website, you know, your business, so you can interact safely with individuals.
So is there anything else you should look for a company? I mean, how do you make that decision? There seems like there's so many companies.
Yeah, that's, if you're looking for a deal and the deal is too good, they say, you know, it's probably not true. And maybe look on. So the way I look at that is, you know, I worked for a short period of time with an accounting firm, and they use this term due diligence, mm-hmm. which means do your research, do your background checks. So when I, you know, look online for items, I don't usually buy the first thing that I see. I'm looking for looking at the reviews. So you can look at reviews of websites. You can look at reviews of the product. I take my time. I don't pull the trigger real fast. And I look and see, are other people selling that item? And, you know, for example, sometimes on eBay, I think there are people that list products that hope that someone that sees that product they've listed is going to be bought by the first-time shopper because it's like 10 times or 20 times the price of what it normally would sell for. So I look for, you know, is that a valid offer? Is it pretty close? You know, reviews of who's selling it to me, the website or an individual, and, you know, just do the background checks.
Sure. So are you better off going with a name you recognize?
Not always.
Okay.
I go back and forth sometimes. I'll buy stuff from large stores, and other times I'll buy stuff from small stores. I think it really is a matter of, you know, your comfort level with, are you okay with what you've read about the reviews for the website? Are you okay with what you've read about reviews for the product? And the other thing that I tell people that you get out of reading the reviews for the products that you're looking at is there are sometimes questions answered or asked that you didn't even think of.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, oh, I didn't think it could be used that way. So, or there's another model that maybe you should look for because it fits your situation better. So it might be less, it might be more, but at least you have that option. And that's, I think that's probably one of the the values of looking at those reviews are things that you don't normally get by just clicking on the product and reading about it. You
right.
get people's interaction and feedback from actually experiencing and using it.
Now, what about how you pay for your purchase? You decided on the website, you decided on what you want to get, now you have to pay.
Yeah.
So what's the safest way to do that?
You can use a credit card, you can use a debit card, you can use PayPal. There are other methods of payments out there. I think those are the biggest ones as far as people paying for them. You can, you can register your cards on site with some of the larger, shops. You can do it with the smaller ones.
Is that a good idea?
Is it a good idea? Technically, it's supposed to be encrypted.
Okay.
And there are rules for the website that does that in terms of MasterCard, Visa, Discovery. They all have certain rules to be compliant with, you know, doing that. So I personally don't. I've done it in the past, but with all the breaches that have happened in the last, let's say, 10 years, it's probably, but some of them insist, and, you know, they keep badgering me, you know, keep pestering me and saying, hey, you know, your renewal's coming up, but you don't have a valid, you know, card.
Right.
And I just kind of fight that off. But I remind myself using a calendar that if I have something timely that needs renewal, I put it in my calendar to make me aware that it's coming due, because you can get in quicksand with some of these things.
So you're talking about an automatic renewal.
Correct.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. But here's another thing that I don't think a lot of people do. There's a lot of people that do it, but there's a lot of people that don't do it with online shopping, is that there's extra value in signing up for some of these places like Ebates and Pennyful and Coupon Cabin, where they allow you to shop the site and they interact with your buying and actually give you money back in terms of you accumulate money over time and get gift cards to Amazon or Walmart or, you know, whichever place you choose, or you can get cash back.
Okay.
And I think the largest one is Ebates, has been advertising for several years.
So how does that work? You go to Ebates first?
You go to Ebates, you sign on with them, and then they have tons of offers on their site, or you can search, and then you go through... Essentially, it's active on your system to track that you're buying the product, you know,
that they advertised.
That they advertise or through Amazon, Walmart, or wherever it might be. And when you actually pay online for it, you know, that whole thing is tracked.
Right. So that they know, it's kind of like with Amazon has, you can give to some charitable program every time you buy something, so similar to that.
Yeah, so you get, you know, some of the sites offer, you know, you have to pay attention because the offers expire after a certain period of time, and they're limited in terms of the number of people that can get them, but sometimes if you spend 100, you get 100 back.
Sure.
They might have a bonus offering and things like that. So if you know you're going to buy something, then why not, you know, get a little extra back to spend later?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. We're talking to Peter Green today. He is a computer consultant with InfoStar.com, and he visits with us regularly to help with your tech questions. What problems are you having with your tech devices? Do you have any questions about buying online? Or have you solved your problem and want to share what you found? Give us a call. Join in. We have open lines, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@WPR.org. This is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadone. We're talking about tech questions with regular guest Peter Green. Peter, we've had a couple of people that sent us an email with questions. Lynn in Stevens Point asks, is it safer to order online in the store itself rather than at home? For example, when she shops at Land's End, she can go to the computer terminal at the front of the desk and order there. Is that safer or worse because she has to enter her credit card number?
It's actually the same.
It's the same.
Yeah,
okay.
There is no difference.
Mm-hmm. Well, there, simple answer, Lynn. Also, Renee emailed. She said that she inherited her father's laptop because he passed away, and she cannot log into his laptop because she doesn't have the password or the PIN number. How can she avoid putting in a PIN or password so that she can get into the laptop? She's tried the escape button, but no luck. And she says she does not have a recovery disk.
Yeah, there are actually, it depends on the version of the operating system, but online you can search for how to basically make the password for that system non-existent. So, you know, you have access to it.
Okay.
But you have to boot it up with typically is either a CD or a DVD or a thumb drive, but you have to go through a sequence of telling the computer to boot off of that disk or other media that's specially set up to do that.
Okay.
And then it will allow you to reset the password to basically nothing.
So it sounds like it might be a job for someone who's done that before.
Yeah. I've done it. It works.
Uh-huh. But you have a lot of experience
here. Right. I haven't tried it with, I haven't had to try it with Windows 10. I'm sure that it's out there. I know it's worked for prior versions of the operating system. And again, it's just doing a little research online. If you want to, they usually give you the instructions for, you know, this is download the file and you need to have software to burn a CD or a DVD. And, you know, they give you the steps to do that.
Sure, sure, yeah.
Yep. But it does work.
It does work. Yeah. So there, you can do it, Renee. You can do it. It's just a matter
of figuring
it out.
Yeah, you could probably take it to a local tech place and they'll probably help you out.
Yeah, that might be a little easier. Good luck. Good luck, Renee. Well, let's go to the phones. We have Chuck in Viroqua. Hi, Chuck. What can we help you with today?
Good morning. I've got a Pavilion HP laptop computer. And when I bring it up, when I power it on in the morning, the screen is dark, and then it kind of turns purplish, pinkish, and then after a while, it finally, lights up and comes on correctly. And I'm wondering, is that a sign? What I've been able to tell on mine is it may be the wiring between the screen and the computer. It may be, the computer going. It's only 3 years old, so I'm wondering, is there a fix for that, or is it kind of on its way out?
You know, it sounds to me like after it warms up, it's okay.
Right.
There's probably a component that's, starting to fail, and you won't actually know what it is until it outright, stops working. You could probably contact HP and give them your model and, see if they've had, other occurrences of, other people having problems like you, and maybe they've issued a fix to it. You might luck out and it might be, firmware or something that you have to do to update your system. That's always a possibility. Or they may have had a number of systems recalled because of that problem, and they may still have extended the warranty coverage. I've had stuff like that happen with computers, and I've had it happen with cars as well. So until you check with the manufacturer, you won't really know.
Okay. Well, thanks for calling in, Chuck. Do you have a tech problem or a tech question? Maybe you have need a recommendation for a gift for a tech person on your list. We'd like to hear from you. We have open lines, 1-800-642-1234. And, of course, you can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Kira in Sparta emailed, and she was wondering, is it worth it to buy insurance for a new laptop? Does it really cover what is needed?
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I toy with that a lot. With Apple products, they always throw the Apple Care at you that goes beyond, the first 12 months or whatever they warranty what you're buying. I've had it where it was worthwhile, and I've had it where it isn't. That's tough.
It's like any insurance, right?
Yeah,
you've got to.
I've bought insurance, extended insurance on one of the cars I owned in the past, And first 4 years were fine. And that was what was covered.
Of course.
You know, and the fifth year was not so good, mm-hmm. and it had to come out of pocket. Mm-hmm. I guess it depends on how long you plan to own the computer for. They may have, you know, durations that you can, you know, buy 24 months, 36 months, 48 months. You know, the life of a system is usually 3 to 5 years, and then the manufacturer starts to sunset, you know, your
right.
operating system
sure.
and things
sure.
like that. I think it really depends on your comfort level, and it might be also where you are. You know, if you're in a rural area and you have to travel long distances to get help, you might be better off because you're going to have to ship it, you know, back to the manufacturer to get an extended warranty that way. So that plays a role as well, you know, where you're located.
Right. That's a good point. That's mm-hmm. a good point. Now, we were talking earlier about buying things on the internet. Is there an antivirus program that's maybe better for that than others? It'll protect you a little bit more?
Well, you should have antivirus on your system.
Mm-hmm.
That'll keep you away from malicious websites. It will also help filter your incoming, and also, if you want to say, protect your or cleanse your outgoing email, that you're not sending something to somebody.
Uh-huh.
'Cause I periodically do see those. There might be applications out there that might be like an extra security blanket, you know, for online shopping. I have not tried them.
Okay.
But there are a lot of creative tech people out there that are coming up with
yeah.
something new and,
yeah.
and great every day. There are programs to do, you know, sketching with, you know, for artistry.
Yes.
That my daughter is into that. And, you know, I look at these things and I go, wow, you know, if only I could have done that when I was
I
a kid,
yeah.
you know, and growing
yeah.
up with it. Who knows? Maybe I might have been a famous artist.
You never know.
But right now I do stick pencil stuff.
So what, I mean, we get calls every time you're on. What mm-hmm. What is your recommendation for antivirus software?
There's a couple of companies that have been merged together,
okay.
Avast and AVG. I believe Avast bought AVG. They've become a large player.
Is that a free one or is that?
You can get it free, mm-hmm. but you can also purchase, which gives you some more flexibility in terms of setup and options. The thing that I get asked a lot, and I make it very clear, there is no 100% guarantee that you will not have something infiltrate your system. The only way to do that is to be disconnected.
And we don't want to do that usually.
And, right. So with that being said, at least have some form of protection. There are a number of them out there. I've listed a whole bunch of antivirus solutions on the InfoStar Virus Info Center page.
Okay.
There's a whole bunch of links there. There's Bitdefender. There's Norton, McAfee. Some of them, I think we've talked in past shows, Kaspersky, which is Russian-based.
And, you oh, know, let's not go into that one again.
We get that discussion. Then, you know, I enlighten people about an application that was coming out of China. And so, you know, we live in a global, you know, economy,
mm-hmm.
and we share things. There is the good with the bad. And, you know, you have to, you know, evaluate it that way.
Be informed. That's
yep.
the most important thing.
Yep.
Well, let's get back to those phones because we've got Roderick on from Stevens Point. Hi, Roderick. What can we help you with?
Yes. Good morning. Thanks for the show. I was looking at getting someone special because you might be listening in a different
She'll phone. Never guess, I'm sure.
Yes, yes. A new tablet for the holidays. And I wanted to get recommendations for that. And it would have to, if you'd like it to be DVD compatible.
Oh, do tablets have DVDs in them?
Sure there are.
Okay.
So you're talking about like a laptop that really has a touch screen, but, you know, also has a DVD player in it, kind of?
Correct.
Okay. Yeah. You know, some of the larger manufacturers out there that I'm sure they're going to have that are would be HP, IBM. If it doesn't have a DVD, but you like the tablet, as long as it has something like a USB connection to it, or a FireWire in the case of Apple, you can still plug in a DVD player to it. The thing with the DVD option that you're bringing out is that it adds some bulk to it, some thickness to it. So, you know, that's where the trade-off is, having a tablet that's a little bit light, a little bit easier to handle. How often are you really using the DVD? That's, you know, that's a question you have to kind of find out and see if...
Or what is she using the DVD for? Is it a movie or is it something else? So that would make a difference, too.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, Roderick, good luck, and I hope that person was not listening. Or if she was, maybe she can give you a hint that she knows what she wants. Let's go next to David in Milwaukee. Hi, David.
Hello. Let me tell you, I really like your show. I think it's very important.
Well, thank you.
Okay. My question is this, and I know this is kind of out of the ordinary, but I have an Arlo camera. A wireless camera with a Netgear base station, which I think is somewhat of a router, because I know I hardwire it from my router into the Netgear base station. And what had been happening is I think somebody had somehow compromised my system because my system was becoming disarmed quite regularly. And what I wanted to try to do is there a way I can go into the Netgear base station, look at the logs, and see if there's certain MAC address, you know, an identifier, that somebody is logging in illegally and possibly getting into where I live?
You'd probably see that in the main router for, you know, where your internet signal is coming in, because that's the one that's probably sharing. Or it might be configured where your Netgear is, you call it a base station. Netgear is typically for Wi-Fi and networking as well. So either one of them probably would have logs and would show you the MAC addresses that were logged into the system. The question I ask whenever I go to a location, you know, are you using the default password? Because if you're using the default password, then more than likely your system's going to get can be easily compromised. So if you know the password to your system, you can go in, you can, you know, change it, you can hide your SSID if you want, but then it makes it a little bit more difficult to know whether or not your signal's out there, you know, based on where you're located when you're trying to use it for Wi-Fi. But if you're using the default password, which might be 123456,
do not use that.
Or all zeros. You know, that's, you know, then more than likely your system is compromised. If it's a complicated password, then it probably isn't.
Okay. Well, hopefully that helped, David. Thank you. Next, we have John, who's calling from Fitchburg. Hi, John.
Hi, I have a question. I'm not really up to on iPads or equivalent other ones, and I'm wondering what I need to get either a new laptop or get an iPod or an iPad. I don't know the difference. What do I need to watch for?
Well, the iPad, you know, if you're looking at like an Apple iPad, they're locked in terms of how much storage. If you're looking at a laptop, you usually have a lot more variety in terms of picking storage. So, for example, an iPad, they may say it's 64 gig, 128, or 256, and that's and you can't change that. If you're looking at a laptop, you might have higher capacities to go past that, such as like having a terabyte of storage. or you can add on to it at a later time or change it versus a tablet from Apple, you can't. That's, you know, cut in stone. That's what you get when you buy it. So that's one thing. Also, when the options with the iPad is whether or not you have a cell phone service turned on so you can use that while you travel versus just having it Wi-Fi enabled, which means that you have to be at near an access point to access Wi-Fi and you have to have permission to access that Wi-Fi. So if you're using it in your home, typically you would have access. When you travel, you need to make sure that you can use the Wi-Fi with someone's permission. The laptop, you can look at laptops that have, you know, the touchscreen capability, and they also have access to a keyboard. You can add a Bluetooth keyboard to an iPad, but it's not quite the same.
I've got one. I love that. But you're right. It's not quite the same.
Right.
Yeah. Well, what, John, what are you actually using the laptop for? Maybe that would be helpful to just make a decision.
Well, I think I haven't used it this way, but I wanted to start using it so I can, like, go online and look at sport pages, look at if I'm shopping, I want to compare something, or want to pick up. Just for instance, some news item that's just hot off the wire. I want to be able to look it up, maybe read an article.
Sure, yeah, so you're not storing a bunch of stuff. So yeah, an iPad or a tablet might be perfect.
Yeah, that's exactly how I use my iPad. And I've had for 8 years because I haven't really seen a need to upgrade because I do some simple browsing. I look at sports pages. I check out some websites, read some, you know, news articles, and
it's like a big smartphone. I mean, it's kind of the same thing. So,
yep.
Okay, John. Well, hopefully that will help you decide what you want to get. So, excuse me. We are talking with Peter Green. He's a computer consultant with Infostar.com. He visits us regularly to help you out with your personal computer problems. We have a couple of open lines. Why don't you give us a call? The number, 1-800-642-1234. Up next, we've got Larry in Wisconsin Rapids. Hi, Larry.
Hello.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm going to print some, I want to make some political signs to put on the roads, and I need a banner about 12 inches high and about 4 feet long, and I need a way to print from a computer, either a program or a printer or whatever that will do that for me.
That's a great question. So it's really not the computer, it's the software that you need to look at. There's products by Adobe that would allow you to do stuff like that. So you're basically in control of the size of the page. Microsoft Word might work.
I think, they do, or Publisher does it too.
Publisher. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then you have the challenge of printing out what you said, which is 12 inches by 4 feet.
Mm-hmm. I think you can buy that paper, poster or banner paper
I've never tried
store.
That.
I believe you can.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The other creative thing to do is look for like a plotter, because a plotter would allow you to print out on an endless stream.
Right.
And then you basically probably would cut it to size. You know, in other words, it could be a plotter that's 2 feet wide and 4 feet, it could be 10 feet, it could be 12 feet long or whatever, and then you just have to trim it to size. Or the other option is you could use a service.
That's what
so
I was
in other words,
say.
You
yeah.
could do all the design work on your system with the software that you're using. So Adobe works on Windows or Macs. Microsoft works. I don't know if Publisher is on the Mac. But I know Word is on the Mac.
I think you can get it for Mac.
Yeah.
But I don't know how great it works.
And you could probably go to a site like, like CNET, CNET.com, and look for software for designing posters or banners. And then I would check locally to see, you know, I don't know, you said Wisconsin Rapids. I don't know, you know, what's up in that area in terms of like a Staples or an Office Max, Office Depot.
UPS
store
and
so forth.
Walgreens might even do it.
Yep.
So yeah, there's a lot of different spots.
Or some local printers, mm-hmm. print shops,
yep.
where you can actually either send them the file, so you may sign on to their website as, you know, a member user and then upload your files, or you just walk in with a thumb drive and give them their files and then just go over what, you know, how you'd like it printed and mm-hmm. so forth.
Or some will even design it for you too. So there's
yep.
lots
yep.
of options. So hopefully, Larry, you'll find somebody that can help you out with that banner.
Yeah. And I think, Jill, you have a great, you know, great comment there, is that the time to invest in the software, the hardware, and do all that work versus working with someone, you know, that will do it for you
yeah.
for, you know, probably a fraction of the cost might be, and time.
Yes.
Might be a lot easier.
And less frustration, too.
Right.
Okay. Well, let's go to Steve is up next. He's in Madison. Hi, Steve.
Hi. Hey, I have a quick question. I'm going to buy a new laptop. And when I look at Generation 8 microprocessors and Generation 7 microprocessors, the laptops with Generation 7 are just a lot cheaper. But should I spend the extra money to get the Generation 8? Is it just going to last a lot longer, or what's your thoughts?
Well, if you invest in the latest and greatest, it's usually, you know, good for like the next 6 months to be the latest and greatest, and then something else comes along. I'd be, you know, looking at how much, you know, memory you can afford to put in the system. So, you know, I don't know the full gamut of laptops and how much they, you know, the different models have, but, you know, like at least 16 gigs of memory, probably 32, or at least to be expandable to 32, you know, whether or not you're going to use a solid state drive or still use a spin drive. You know, those all also factor into the cost of the system, and they also add speed to it. It's nice to have the latest and greatest, but like I said, that lasts about 6 months, and then something else comes along. So,
it's a choice.
Yeah, you know, it depends on how much, you know, extra it's going to cost. If it's $500 and you can afford that, then I'd probably go with the latest and greatest. If it's $1,000, you know,
maybe not.
It just depends on your pocketbook.
Sure. Okay. Yep. All right. Well, thank you for that question, Steve. Next up is Rita. She's in Williams Bay. Hi, Rita.
Good morning.
What can we help you with?
I have an iPad Air 2. It's about 2 to 3 years old. And in the last week, the battery seems to wear down fast. And when I try to charge it, it doesn't accept the charge. I just have the battery with a red, you know, dead sign on it. It won't take the charge. And then all of a sudden it takes the charge and it's 100%.
Do you have apps running that might be draining it prematurely?
No, I'm watching my apps. I close them all the time.
Hmm.
So when, just to clarify, Rita, when you plug it in and it's red, it's completely drained, it doesn't start charging sometimes?
No, correct.
Hmm.
Maybe a charging cord is loose?
Yeah, that's a possibility. That would be one thing to try first. You know, the other option is to do a reset on it, but I'd probably check the cord first before that.
Because I've done that myself where I haven't plugged it in all the way,
yep.
or I've got to wiggle it a little bit. So
yeah, I've had chargers sometimes act fickle and then all of a sudden come back to life.
Yeah.
So I would be inclined to either check the cable or the adapter that's doing the charging to see if you can find something, you know, get something different and see what happens then.
Yeah, hopefully that'll work for you, Rita. Good luck. Next, we've got Kevin, and he's calling from Milwaukee. Hi, Kevin. Kevin, are you there? Kevin? Well, apparently we don't. But he was wondering how to get a movie onto a blank DVD from his computer so that he can play it on the TV, because apparently they're not currently compatible.
There's software that allows you to do that. Microsoft... Windows Media Player requires an add-on to burn a DVD that would allow you to play it on the TV. So there's software that allows you to do that. It just depends on, you know, which system you're using. But I remember years ago my kids doing a video project, and we were using Windows Media Player and watching it on the computer, but then you couldn't use the DVD unless you had special software to burn it.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Well, and you have to worry about copyright issues, too. I mean, don't you? When you're
If it's a file that you've downloaded for a movie, yeah, there are copyright issues. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. Well, Kevin, I don't know where you went, but hopefully we answered your questions. We're talking about tech issues today. Has your computer been giving you problems? Well, give us a call. Our number, 1-800-642-1234, or you can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You're listening to The Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau filling in for Larry today. I hope you can join us tomorrow because tax expert Mary Mellum is back with us, and she's going to talk about the changes in the charitable giving deduction laws. So, and of course, answering your tax questions. So join us at 11 tomorrow on the Ideas Network. Right now we are talking about tech with Peter Green. He is a computer consultant with Infostar.com. And we're going to take more questions, and we've got quite a few waiting. But, you know, before we do that, Peter, I had asked you to come up with a list of tech gifts that people might be interested in giving to their loved ones. What do you have on your list?
Wow. There's a lot, so I added to it from last year.
Okay.
For someone that I like to have a garden, mm-hmm. and they've, created these gardens with technology, you know, with light control and humidity and water and all that, so you can grow all year long. And so those are available online. I put that all on the Infostar.com homepage. If you scroll down, you'll see gift ideas. There's Bluetooth speakers, sound bars. You know, if you don't want wires showing with your great big TVs, I've hooked up a couple of those with friends. And what surprises me is, though, I used an optical cable and a digital optical cable and an HDMI cable, and the HDMI actually gave a better signal. So just be aware that, yeah. You know, sometimes cables make a difference in the sound that's...
And they don't always come with the cables you need.
They don't, but they seem to be getting better about that.
Are they getting better at that?
Yeah. Yep. There's, Amazon's got newer versions of their Echo, Google Home. There's, headsets. There's the Tile and the tracker devices for, you know, if you lose your key, a person that loses things, like losing your keys.
Mm-hmm.
I got into a habit of always putting it in the same pocket, or the same place when I get home.
It's a good habit some of us don't have.
Yep.
But yeah, so those little trackers are, they're not real expensive either, are
No,
they?
They've come down a lot in
mm-hmm,
price.
Mm-hmm.
Tablets, and, you know, there's a whole variety of manufacturers and sizes and things like that. If you're looking at new cell phones, sometimes they have specials with those that they offer in the store. So there's no shortage. But if you're looking for something that's new and different, make sure you read reviews, not only from where you're buying it, but, you know, also on user experience and from people that actually have used it.
They're very helpful.
Yep.
Okay, well, let's get back to the phones then. We've got Baird in Platteville. Hi, what's your question?
Hi, thanks for having me. So my question is, for Christmas, I'm looking at getting my girlfriend a music producing software, specifically Ableton Live, if you've heard of it.
Uh-huh.
And I was just wondering, like, compatibility-wise, what would that be running? Because I just have an old iPad and a pretty old laptop, HP desktop, laptop. And I was just curious, what software is Unity that works pretty well, and then if so, like, how demanding they're going to be?
Ooh,
what kind of specs I should have.
All right.
What
did you get that? It was kind of a difficult.
What was the name of the product that you mentioned earlier on?
Yeah, it's called Ableton Live. It's like a studio garage band sort of app.
So is this something that's Apple-based that you're looking at?
No, I think it's its own private software. I don't think it's Microsoft or Apple.
Well, I can tell you, if it's anything to do with audio or video, the more horsepower, memory, and storage you have, the better, because you're always talking about working with large files. You know, so if you can't load, you have to load the file into essentially the chalkboard of the computer. That's the RAM. So, and then if you're going to edit it or make changes to it, if you don't have the room, you know, to slice and dice in the computer's chalkboard, then it's going to be slow because it's moving things in and out. And then it also uses the hard drive to cache files. And if you don't have the processor with enough processing capacity, that also plays a factor in how much work it can do and how quickly it can do it. So the more the better. The faster, the better.
So it would make more sense to maybe get a better computer first before you try to get the software, because, well, it's going to be frustrating if you can't run it on your computer.
Right. So you can get software to run on lesser systems, but then you could be waiting and waiting. And then there's more chances. That's right. There's
crash,
more chances of error or crashes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Then they're done that, Peter.
So, so find the software. Check and see what the best recommendations are for, you know, comfortable use with it, and then see what you can afford for the computer, for the hardware.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Because otherwise you're going to be very frustrated, and there's no sense in getting great software if you don't have the computer that can handle it.
That's right.
Right? Okay.
Yep.
All right. Well, good luck, Beard. Next, let's go to Kevin in Milwaukee. Hi, Kevin.
Yes, hello.
Hi.
Hello. Hello?
Yep, go right ahead.
Okay, stuff that I'm trying to get onto a DVD so I can enjoy it at home is like Lancelot's Link, The Secret Chimp, which I used to watch.
Oh, my gosh, I watched that, too.
Do you remember that, too?
I do.
That is no longer copyrighted. And the site that I come on to try to put it onto the DVD player, it states that they're giving it away for free. So the thing is, I just, you know, I put the DVD. I'm using a computer out usually somewhere. It's not my own equipment. I don't have my own equipment. I'm borrowing always. And so when I put the DVD into the port that comes out for it and put it back into the hard drive, you know, I try using, as the gentleman suggested, the Microsoft Media Player and so forth. You know, and it spins. You hear it whirring in there and recording, and it takes a matter of seconds. I'm just always amazed by that. But then by the time I get it home and put it into the DVD player, I know this sounds very analog, but, you know, by the time I get it home and put it into the player, it won't play. It says it's not compatible with the system and so forth, you know?
Yeah, there's actually, you can't just use Microsoft Media Player itself to create a DVD that would play on a TV. There's actually an add-on. I think the product that I used was, and it's probably changed, but it was actually had a name called DVD Santa. But I'm sure by now there are other, you know, add-ons to do that. You'll just have to do some research on it. But using Microsoft Media Player just to create the DVD to play on the TV won't work. There are other programs out there to do that. So you're basically grabbing that media file and writing it in the format that it needs to be on the DVD.
Does he have to download that onto the computer memory before he can?
Yeah, you have to. It's going to be software that you'll install, and
well,
then you grab.
That, yeah. Okay.
And then once you install the software, then you grab the file, and then you give it the instructions to burn it to a DVD.
Bring it in. Yeah. Yep. It's a little complicated. So, but I can understand that he wants to, you know, get that.
But I remember that. Well, I remember my kids being frustrated with, they created this video project that they needed to hand in, mm-hmm. so that they could show it on the player in school on the TV for the class to see, and they're like, "Dad,
this is not working.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And it was all because the media player wouldn't allow you to do that.
So thumb drives are nice now. Thumb drives are nice. Okay.
But you have to have a computer attached to the TV to then play
This is true. This yeah. is true. Okay, well, we've got a couple of people that actually sent in a email. And Daria in Milwaukee sent one that's very interesting. What are your thoughts on the safety of digital doorbells like Ring? Can they be hacked?
Wow.
yeah, it's different.
You know, I'm not going to go out there and say that they can't be hacked, because there's always, you know, somewhere a backdoor for something. But, you know, I see more often than not them being used to, you know, ward off, you know, people that are doing things that they shouldn't be
sure.
at your front door.
yes.
So, you know, I don't know. I don't have any experience with the Ring, but I'm sure there are certain guarantees. But, you know, from the company, it's become very popular. But again, you know, it's a device that hooks up to the internet. You know, that's how you're, you know, it's transmitting and communicating. So
it could be hacked yeah. at some point, I'm sure. So, okay. Well, thanks for that question, Daria. Let's go back to the phones now. We've got Bruce in Hartford. Hi, Bruce. What's your question?
Hi there. Just a comment. The discussion a while, a few callers back about the cords not charging your iPhones.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I had that problem, and I tried all kinds of cords. Some worked, some didn't. Sometimes the ones that did work didn't work, and so it was back and forth. I finally took it into an Apple store. There was fuzz in the receptacle part of the phone.
Sure.
Where you plug, he took a little sharp, you know, like a needle or a pin or something, and he dug out some fuzz there, and it was not connecting.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so simple. I mean, it's really dumb. But
no, that's great. You've probably helped a ton of people.
Uh-huh.
Well, and really, you, and it's so simple. Try it, because I've done it since. You know, if you keep your phone in your pocket, it might limp up or something. And
very simple. Along those lines, I'm going to tell you a funny thing related to that. How many times do you think that people have thrown out vacuum cleaners because they actually haven't cleaned them? That's why they're no longer sucking up dirt.
Oh, yeah. I wonder about that. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing.
True. I mean, especially if you keep that in your pocket.
Yeah.
Lint from your clothing. Mm-hmm. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Well, great. Thank you so much, Bruce. That was really nice of you to call in. And hopefully that will help some of the other people.
I think you gave a lot of people Christmas presents.
There you go.
Because now they're going to be buying something else.
There you go. We did have, if you've got any questions, we do have open lines, so please give us a call, 1-800-642-1234, or you can send an email to ideas@wpr.org, and we did have a couple of people doing that. Talking about iPhones, Joni in Madison called to ask if it's a good idea to buy a refurbished iPhone.
You know, that's a great question, and my answer is yes, and the reason I say that is... I'm actually in the process of sending back an audio-video receiver. And what they're doing is, you know, I asked the question, are you going to replace it or are you going to fix it? And I knew the answer, but then they finally confirmed that they're going to send me a new unit. The unit was brand new out of the box, but it didn't work. It shorted out right away and didn't work, so that's why I'm sending it back. So just like a phone, you know, recertified, refurb. What they do is they get these units back, and, you know, the problem varies from A to Z what happened to them. It could be a small fix, could be a large fix. But what they do is they take all these units that come back, and they recertify them at the factory and repackage them. And they either sell them out on the open market directly, or they sell them to a reseller that's going to sell them out on the open market, and they offer them at a greatly reduced price, and they also give warranties on them, and it saves you a lot of money.
But what about the person that's on Craigslist or something that says, I've got this iPhone
that's
I want
a little
to
different.
Sell you?
That's a little different,
mm-hmm.
and that should be something that you should have checked out and make sure that it's in, doesn't have issues with it.
So it's probably a good idea if you're going to do that to go to a reputable place
yep.
or like Apple directly or, mm-hmm. or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And Apple has deals on their website for refurbs and Dell computer and all the others out there, that's part of them selling their product, is they need to part ways with their refurbs or recertified factory systems.
Sure.
Yep.
And we just have about a minute left, but we've got Patty Jo in La Crosse who emailed, is there an easy way to change a password, the one that she's used for years? It's the same password. Now, I'm not quite sure what the password is on. Maybe her computer, I'm assuming?
On the computer, you can change it to whatever you want. And, you know, if it's with your email provider, you might have to call in if you're having issues and, you know, talk with them to change it. And they'll just send you a reset link.
Sure. You know? And on the computer itself, maybe she doesn't know where to go to make the change to the password.
Yeah, it's in the settings. You'll have to, depends on the operating system where mm-hmm. you go into preferences, settings, or options to, you know, for the user. To reset the password.
Yeah. So settings, and it would be security, right? Would that
yep.
be under
mm-hmm.
there? Okay.
Yeah,
so,
you're getting
yeah.
good.
Yeah. Hey, what can I say? You know, you've been around computers long enough. Well, we've been talking with regular guest Peter Green. He is a computer consultant with Infostar.com. But we'll be back to take more questions and also find out what's on Peter's top 10 website list right after this look at the news. We're talking about computers today on The Larry Mueller Show. Hi, I'm Jill Nadeau, in for Larry today. Glad to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Our guest is Peter Green. He is a computer consultant with Infostar.com, and he visits with us regularly to help with your computer problems. What questions do you have about your electronic devices? Join our conversation by calling 1-800-642-1234, and you can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Now, Peter, before we go to the phones, you always have a list for us of top 10 websites, but of course your list on your website is like top 400 or something like that. You've got more there, right? So
yeah.
you're going to want to go there. Why don't you talk a little bit about what you have on your top 10?
So if you go to Infostar.com and on the top left, if you click on top 10 archives and scroll to today's date or click on the current top 10, you'll get the same list. So the first one is Spotrac, which is all-inclusive of all the major sports for salaries for teams and for players. And it's used, I guess, pretty heavily for fantasy sports.
Ah, makes sense.
Yep, it's pretty amazing. Number two is called Captera, and it's to help you find software solutions. So there'll be more like accounting, you know, business kind of software solutions.
Okay.
Number three, I mentioned eBay. It's about, you know, a site to help when you're shopping to get a little bit more money back. There are others out there. Pennyful.com is one. Claims have 1,300 plus stores and almost 4,500 coupons and 41 million products that it helps you with. Number four, I found useful. I don't know how to pronounce this, for Grantica.
Sounds
it's,
like it,
it's
yeah.
a perfume encyclopedia.
I was surprised to see that on your list.
Yeah, but I found what I was looking for, and it gave me what I needed. So healthdata.gov is all the data that the government collects as related to healthcare, and it's supplied by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, as well as from state partners. And along with that is also number six, CMS.gov, which is also a federal website. And they have links there to Medicare.gov and Medicaid and so forth. And also making note that our open enrollment for the Affordable Health Care is ending on December 15th. I don't like the name Obamacare because that's a political name. It's Affordable Health Care. And I sure hope it gets fixed. That's all I could say. You can enroll in it, but I sure hope the whole thing sometime gets fixed.
Sometime.
Yep. Number seven. So with online shopping, we've had, you know, also scams come up during this time of the year. So there's a website called eConsumer.gov, and that's a partnership of 35 plus international consumer protection agencies. So if you have an international kind of scam, more like a Nigerian relative or whatever they're doing out there with that kind of, because that was one that made it popular years ago, and that's why I use, say, Nigerian.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
It could be from anywhere. If it's international in flavor, that's a site to go to and, you know, ask them to look into it. If it's domestic, FTCcomplaintassist.gov is a website where you can report it for, you know, domestic scams. And I also link to the donotcall.gov registry for don't bug me with phone calls. Number nine is a digital product platform for design. And it's called envisionapp.com. And apparently it's very popular with the large companies. So that's why I make mention of it. And number 10, something that keeps getting more and more popular is voice over IP for phones. So VoIP. So it's voipreview.org. And there's another one. And basically it helps enlighten you as to what the solutions are, reviews on those solutions, and, you know, just
what was the problem. If those are you can find the answer. What is the problem that you're talking about?
Well, it's you know, does it have the features that you need in using voice over internet for phones? Okay. So if you're, you know, we used to have, well, a lot of companies still have phone systems where you call in and you have extensions. Mm-hmm. With the voice over IP, it's your an IP address.
So it's a digital
correct
thing. Okay, great. Now that you're verklempt, so I'll answer that question. Well, actually, let's go. And you can find those at Peter's website, by the way. There's a lot more information. There's links. It's infostar.com. So he's got all that, all those listed for you. And let's go back to the phones, and we've got Marcelo and Nina. Hi, what can we help you with?
Hi, yes. So I have a PC, it's a Windows 8, and about 6 months ago, I updated the software, and after doing that, it says to restart. When I restarted it, and a message appeared that the updates failed to unload, and they were reverting the updates and not turning the computer off. And I would stay like for 3 or 4 hours, and then the computer would turn on. So that's been happening often. If I leave the computer on for 3 or 4 days, it will automatically restart, and the same message would appear that. So I Googled that, and I see the other people having the same problem. I follow the steps to fix the problem, but it actually did not fix the problem. I was wondering if he could help up with another idea about how to get rid of those messages.
One of the things I usually do is try to clean the registry on the system, and I use a program called CCleaner. The problem, do you get an error code, like a numeric code?
No, there isn't a numeric error code. No, it's just the message there at the beginning of the, mm-hmm. when I start the computer. I'm not in front of the computer right now or
right.
at home, so I can't read that, but... it's something along the lines of failure to update, failure to upload the updates, and the system is reverting the updates and
right.
don't turn the computer. About something about like that, those lines.
Yeah, in my web top 10 list, there is also a link to Microsoft's catalog. And what you might want to do is you need to look and see what version of Windows 8 you're using, and see if you can download a cumulative update from their catalog site, and essentially update your force an update on your system by just downloading the file and then running the install on it. You might want to check some of those. You said you were looking at and finding people are having the same kind of problem. I would look and see where in the discussion someone actually had success, because that might be a technique that you have to try. I know with not Windows 8, but with Windows 10 recently, I had to download a version of, or a build, a full build of Windows 10 and force my like probably handful of systems to get to that level by downloading that file and then installing it, because none of the systems would take the updates. They were getting these constant error messages.
Oh, that sounds complicated.
Yeah, it's frustrating. It can be very frustrating.
Yeah, definitely. Well, Marcelo, good luck. I hope you can get that taken care of, because that really is annoying. And speaking about Windows system, let's go to Arlene in New Berlin. She's got a question about that. Hi, Arlene.
Yes, good morning. Peter, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Just really hope you can just give me some advice. I'm 78 years old, so I did not grow up in the tech world. So I'm having a difficult time. I'll tell you why I'm at calling. I have a Windows 7. The Intel is memory. I have memory 8, i5. It's a tower, and I had it done by iNet in Waukesha.
Okay.
Now, I know Windows 7 is going to outdate by 2019. So what I want to know is, I don't want to change the tower, but I was thinking of taking the tower in and having the them put in Windows 10. But how long is Windows 10 going to be around?
You think I have a crystal ball, don't you?
No, but I have another question after that to ask you. So
why don't you ask me the other question, too?
Oh, okay. Now, when you do change, you know, to Windows 10, do you have to, because I have everything wireless. I have a router, speakers, camera, and a printer. I have to change everything, like my passwords and all that other stuff, when I get Windows 10? Would it be better to do that? I do have on my site a special thing that I had transferred from the old computer that my husband set up some files and stuff, but my kids keep telling me, just make your computer clean. So I'm just wondering about that, and I'll take my answer off the air.
No, stay on. Stay on.
Oh, okay.
So switching from Windows 7 to Windows 10, you mentioned 8 gigs of RAM and i5. The 8 gigs of RAM...
How many left I have? I have 700, it says on there 931 on the computer. I'm looking at the, and I have 716 gigabytes left.
Right.
So you know that I haven't used hardly anything on the computer.
So you have plenty of storage, that's good, but the 8 gigs of memory, you should see if you could update that to at least 16, and your i5 would support using Windows 10. Okay. So you need to check and see if your hardware can be upgraded from 8 gigs to 16 gigs of RAM. Your hard drive storage is fine.
And that's two different things.
Yeah,
which people confuse sometimes.
Yep, it's two different things. So if you can go past that, that'd be great, but I think 16 is probably what your limit's going to be. As far as the wireless, that really shouldn't be affected at all. The wireless comes from things like, you know, if it's your keyboard and your speakers hooked up to your system, all that is not going to change. If you're talking about like Wi-Fi, that's coming from your router, so that's not going to change. So you should be okay.
All right.
I don't see any differences.
You know, for someone who didn't grow up in the digital age, I think she's doing pretty darn good, don't you?
Absolutely.
Very impressive, Arlene. Thank you. Do you have a question about your tech? Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. And let's take some emails. We had Kate in Minnesota email. How often should you replace your router, and what should you look for when you're buying one? She says they're having issues with a very slow internet, and she thinks this could be part of the problem, and they do live out in the country.
So a new router, I would look for something that's at least dual band. There are a number of companies that put routers out there. Depends on how far you want the signal to go. You know, in terms of Wi-Fi, there's Netgear, Linksys, D-Link. There are a number of others out there. What I would do is go online and go to maybe a site like CNET, or even go to Amazon and shop for routers, and then just start, you know, clicking on them and reading the reviews. You'll be surprised. Some of them have thousands of reviews because they've been out there for a long time. And you might find ones that have 2 or 3 stars, and you might find ones that have all 5 stars. And they'll share with you, you know, how they're using them, problems they've had, whether or not they're easy to work with out of the box, and so forth.
That's what I did when I got mine, and it was exactly that. And it was very helpful.
Yep. And I think people can spend probably anywhere from, let's say, $40 to $100 and be very happy with what they get.
And again, like you said, it depends on how far in you want that signal to go from
That's
the
right.
router.
So. And then the other thing is maybe the router that you have needs firmware update. So you can go online and check with the manufacturer and the model, and may tell you that you need a firmware update, and that's something that you can download and apply. I've actually done that in the past and numerous times, and it's fixed problems that I've had with compatibility issues and speed and things like that.
And it doesn't cost a thing.
So. That's right.
But how do you know when you should replace a router?
When you're having problems.
Okay.
You know, connectivity problems. Mm-hmm. Sometimes just a simple reboot doesn't work. Mm-hmm. And for whatever reason, they just start flaking out.
So try
they
the
are
simple
appliances,
things.
And the appliance part is connectivity.
That's right. Okay, well, let's go back. We've got Christina waiting. She's in Glenwood City. Hi, Christina. What can we help you with?
Hi there. Thank you. Peter, I'm hoping that you can recommend Android apps that do price comparison to help me with my holiday shopping.
Android apps that help you with holiday shopping.
There's some comparison ones out there, right?
Yeah, there probably are. I haven't used any, but again, this is where feedback comes into play. If you go onto the Play Store, which is where you would search for apps, you know, see what the reviews are for those. Google used to make one called Frugal.
Google Frugal?
And you could access it off of your smartphone. So, you know, look and do some online searching from your desktop. For you know, is there anything that works like Frugal, and see if there are Android apps that, you know, fit that bill.
Yeah, I think there must be quite a few of them, Christina, because I've heard some things. I don't remember names, of course, but I know there's quite a few out there. We still have some time left, so if anybody wants to send an email or call in and let us know what you use and what you like, we'd love to hear from you. And Christina, keep listening. Maybe you'll find out which one is the best from that. Thanks for calling. Next up, we've got Jason, and he's in Cudahy. Hi, Jason.
Hey, how's it going?
Well, hi. Jason, what can we help you with?
So my fiance's father passed away earlier this year, and we were trying to access his iPad, but we don't have the password and or the passcode. And we were just wondering if there's any way we can get access to it or figure out the password or something. I don't know.
Yeah, that I don't know what to do with that. Apple has a restriction on, you know,
they're very picky.
Yeah.
Could they bring it to one of the stores?
You could talk to what they call, you know, one of their geniuses and see what their response is.
I'm sure this can't be the first time that this has happened.
No.
Yeah.
But I know there, to my knowledge, I haven't searched for this because I haven't had the problem to see if there are any solutions out there for, you know, resetting the password.
Because if you reset the password, do you have the chance of maybe losing the information that's on there?
Well, resetting the iPad, you would lose everything off of it.
Right.
So you'd probably want to contact an Apple store and see what your options are for that.
Yeah, I think that would be a great idea, Jason. Good luck. Oh, that's so sad. Okay, and we've got an email from Joe. Is one antivirus usable across his iPad and laptop and iPhone? Apparently, his husband has McKeeper, and that is what he is planning to install on his laptop. Does that one installation cover his other Apple devices?
No, they have to. It has to be installed across all of them.
Per device.
Per device. So I have antivirus on my phone, mm-hmm. which is might be the same name, but it's
for a phone,
special for the phone, versus desktop, versus Mac, and versus tablet. So you have to have a separate installation occurrence for each device.
Nice thought, Joe, yep. But it would be great if that was the case, wasn't it?
Yeah. A couple of things before we part ways here.
Yeah.
Apple released Mojave for the Mac, mm-hmm. for the new OS. And I've installed it on one machine, but I haven't installed another because I've been told to kind of hold off and wait until developers have checked to see if they're okay with it. Because they use Apple products and they're not fully convinced that it's safe yet, which is interesting in and of itself.
It is.
And then Microsoft, on my homepage on infostar.com, I put Microsoft's 800 number because in early October they released prematurely a version of 1809, build 1809 for Windows 10, and inadvertently had users complaining of losing data, and then they pulled it. It's now been re-released,
okay.
But if you happen to have your system downloading build 1809 and having problems, you'll find the 800 number you can call to get help.
So is that then an update to 10?
Yes.
It is an update.
It was 1803, and they call it the Fall Creators Update. So 1803 is what we've all had since spring, like April,
mm-hmm.
and now they've gone from 1803 to 1809, and you can get help from them.
Hopefully, yes. Well, if there's a telephone number and a person actually answers.
It's 1-800-MICROSOFT.
That's easy enough. We did have a couple of people call in and said that they've been having problems with the fact that they can't get a person anymore when they have a problem with a company. And they want to know, is that normal? I mean...
Yeah, that seems to be more and more popular, but, you know, having access to a chat, which I've used many times, chat is very helpful. And you just have to pay attention to that chat window.
It pops
that
up.
When you need to be present for when it comes up or they'll close it on you.
Yes, they will.
But it seems to be more and more commonplace that you're not getting a person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems
that
way.
Which is unfortunate.
It is, but you know, when you're talking about costs, so if we want cheaper goods, we have to have less employee costs, mm-hmm. I guess that's the way it works. But you're right, the chat is a really good option. So mm-hmm. with that is, in case anybody hasn't done it before, you have an option. You can email, sometimes call.
Yeah. Or and then they email you the mm-hmm. chat. The summary of the chat, which is nice to have.
Exactly, which is really good because you can mm-hmm. go back, you can check. Because I know I've had them email me instructions, mm-hmm. and of course you can't remember that. So it's nice to be able to go back and say, oh yeah, that's right, that's what they did. So that's an option anyway. Yep. So
happy holidays, everybody.
Yeah, happy holidays. Thank you so much, Peter, for coming in. We really appreciate you helping us out all the time. And
thanks
you
for
will
having me
be back. You're going to be back on February 4th, I believe.
Yep.
So we'll look forward to that. And you know what? Join us tomorrow. Larry will be back and we'll be taking tax questions and looking at new rules for charitable giving. Thanks to Dave Potras for technical direction and Cheryl Gasser for on-air production today. I'm Jill Nadeau, sitting in for Larry. Thanks for listening to the Ideas Network.